All my worst fears were realized when Tate floated into the boiler room, hovering several inches off the ground. His expression locked in a mixture of rage and desperation. Katie floated in after him, alarm creasing her delicate features, instead of her trademark stoicism.
Katie!
I ran to her, or tried to. After the first two steps, I was enveloped by what felt like a giant invisible fist. It squeezed me from the chin down, making escape impossible. Bones was also immobilized, so this wasn't coming from him.
Let me go!
Then Menkaris arrived, and he had an entourage. Veritas was the only Law Guardian I knew by name, but I recognized the other three men. Years ago, they'd supervised Bones' duel with Gregor, which meant we had a history. I'd almost been executed for interfering in that duel, and there were some who still thought I should have been. Marie was next, her long black skirt and tailored black jacket sending more sparks of fear through me. She looked like she was going to a funeral. And while the three vampire council members behind her weren't garbed as somberly, their expressions were darker than pitch. The boiler room sizzled with the power coming off everyone. Any second, it might start raining sparks.
What the bloomin' hell is this?
I am doing what must be done.
Menkaris' obsidian eyes met mine, an abundance of pity in their depths.
I am sorry, Kat.
No, we can't have come so far to lose everything now.
Trove was dead. Marie had sworn to leave us alone. And we'd found Katie.
I looked into my daughter's eyes and swore to protect her. She might not believe me, but over time I'll prove it to her. She's going to have all the love and acceptance she was denied before.
Marie and the other vampires hadn't found us by luck. Only Menkaris knew where we were going. If I had any power left, his head would have ripped from his shoulders.
Menkaris, how could you?
Menkaris did what he could for you. In exchange for delivering the child to us, your lies will now go unpunished.
We didn't ask for your bloody help.
You did not. But as co-ruler of our line, I couldn't permit you to drag our people into war. That is what would have happened, and the result would be the same.
Now or later, the child would die. This way, only one life will be lost, instead of untold thousands.
Please, don't do this.
I wanted to slaughter everyone, not beg them. But with my body immobilized and my abilities exhausted, begging was all I had left.
Please, we'll take her away. You'll never have to see her again. And there will be no war. I promise.
There is no other way.
The council member, who could have doubled as Gandalf from the Lord of the Rings, sniffed as he looked at Trove's body.
Oh, the sulfur stench from that demon is everywhere.
You're about to murder a child. And what you find most distasteful is demon stink. You call yourselves protectors of our race, but all I see before me are cowards.
Silence! Thonos?
A Law Guardian with wild black hair and olive complexion strode over to Katie and withdrew a curved silver blade that was longer than my forearm. Veritas looked away, her mouth tightening.
Don't! Please!
My teeth tore into my lower lip, drawing blood. But though I willed remnants to appear with all of my panic, nothing happened. Trove had drained too much from me. Tears spilled from my eyes, blurring my vision with pink that quickly turned to scarlet.
Wait.
Hope surged when Thonos paused, that wickedly long blade upraised. The Gandalf look-alike raised a brow, but nodded in acquiescence. Marie came over to me, wiping my eyes with brisk yet gentle swipes, and spoke so low that no one but me could hear her.
You can't cry, Reaper. You still carry my power. If you cry, you doom your daughter to the same fate as your uncle.
That's right. If I cry, the blood in my tears will bring Katie back as a ghost.
For a crazed moment, I relished the thought.
If it's the only way we can be together, I'll take it. I've seen other ghost children, and they didn't look like they were miserable.
Kitten.
Bones stared at me, his expression conveying an equal measure of sternness and heartbreak.
Don't.
Of course. I'd be sentencing Katie to a harsher fate than these pitiless bastards have decreed. And worse. For the same reason. Selfishness.
The people around me wanted to end the threat of war the easy way, instead of confronting the deeper issue, that after tens of thousands of years, vampires and ghouls still had a deep-seated mistrust of each other, because they were different races. Why try to resolve their ugly underlying prejudice, when every few hundred years, they could just murder anyone who reminded them of it? I wanted my daughter with me, but unlike them, I'd take the hard road, the one that hurt me the most, instead of her. If I could only be a mother to her for the next few seconds, I'd be sure not to fail. I choked back my tears and used all of my willpower to hold the new ones back. When my eyes were finally dry, I nodded as much as I could.
Right.
You must be strong now. This is the only thing you can do for her.
I've got it.
Marie touched my face, not to wipe away any stray tears. They were gone, as a benediction.
You are a worthy adversary.
Marie returned to the Vampire Council and Law Guardians, whom I bitterly noticed did not want to look into Katie's eyes as she died, even though they had mandated her death. I stared at her, every cell of my body screaming with grief that I refused to release with tears. Katie stared at the knife above her as though hypnotized, her features an odd mixture of fear and determination. Then, as if she sensed my gaze, she looked at me. In my lifetime, I'd been shot, stabbed, staked, burned, bitten, beaten, strangled, hit by a car, and tortured by physical and metaphysical means. Nothing compared to the anguish I felt when our gazes met, and I saw the acceptance in hers. She knew nothing could save her, and despite her obvious fear, she'd come to terms with that. Maybe it was because, in her short captivity-filled existence, she'd never known there was more to life than ugliness and death. So much more, like hope, love, laughing, dancing.
And now she'll never know. It will all end here.
Then two words slid into my mind.
Trust me.
My eyes bulged. Menkaris was the only person I knew who had the ability to communicate telepathically. Yet that wasn't his voice.
That was Bones.
A sliver of me was awed that Bones had this ability, but the rest was too destroyed with grief to care.
He's as helpless as I am to stop this.
Trust me.
Huh. Trust what? That we'll get through this together? Or that time will heal all wounds? I have no intention of healing. I want to feel this pain forever, because it's all I'll have left of my daughter.
Kitten, trust me.
Thonos's blade began to descend toward that tiny, vulnerable throat. Katie still stared at me, and for a split second, her eyes changed from the same deep gray as mine to something else.
Red.
Katie's gaze should have only been able to turn one other color, bright vampire green. Red was the sign of another race, the only one the child wasn't supposed to have in her mixed genetic makeup. Hope blasted through me with enough force to knock me over if I'd been standing under my own power. In the gut-wrenching instant before that deadly blade met flesh, I saw the boiler room through new eyes. Four Law Guardians, three council members, and the Queen of the Ghouls were all present, for the execution of the mixed species child. Everyone from Bones's line might be considered unreliable witnesses for personal reasons, but no one would question any of these witnesses on whether it had really happened. They'd never acted mercifully before, when it came to protecting the power balance between the races. And nothing had changed in the centuries since. I remembered what Marie had said.
Unless there is a public execution, they will keep hunting for her.
She'd believed that so much, she'd been prepared to die for it. Then I remembered Bones's offer.
If we promise you that, will you agree to the rest of our terms?
And what he'd said to me at the time.
Kitten, trust me.
He just said the same thing. 3 times now. I held on to that with all the hopeful desperation in me, as that blade cut all the way through Katie's neck, coming out drenched in crimson on the other side. Her body fell, and the sight of Thonos holding up her head hit me like a wrecking ball straight to the heart. He set it next to her body and flung the excess blood off his blade. My own blood seemed to scream in response.
Oh, God.
Tears streamed in an unending flow from Tate's eyes.
Why?
Marie bowed her head. The other two Law Guardians were stoic, except for Veritas, who stared at Katie's body with an intensity that angered me. Ugh, is she trying to memorize the grisly sight? The council members didn't look at their handiwork. They shifted almost awkwardly. Now that the deed was done, they seemed far less enthused by it. I couldn't stop staring at Katie's crumpled form, her head resting several inches from the rest of her. Horror, hope, and terror mingled into a nauseating brew within me. Am I wrong, and I'm staring at my daughter? Or is this my best friend shapeshifted to look like her? And if so, can she come back from this? Nothing was supposed to kill Denise except demon bone through the eyes. But dear God, she didn't have a head anymore.
Leave the body.
This seemed to surprise the council members. The Gandalf lookalike pursed his lips in disapproval.
We didn't agree to that.
You will. And you will leave the sword. As the child's mother, Kat is entitled to both.
The other council members glanced back and forth between themselves, clearly undecided. Veritas stepped forward, grasping Thonos' hand before he could put his weapon back in its sheath.
You ordered the child's death out of necessity. Denying this request would be cruelty. Do not begrudge her so little when we've taken everything else.
Thonos didn't stop her when she took his blade and laid it at my feet. As she rose, for a second, her piercing gaze met mine. Without saying a word, she managed to convey both admiration and a clear warning.
Why did she do that? Unless she knew more than the others did? She can't know. Could she?
The child and the sword will remain, but I will have some of the demon's bones.
Why does she want that? What if she wants it to plunge into Katie's, or Denise's, eyes?
Menkaris went over to the demon's body, snapping off one of Trove's arms as though it were nothing more than a dry twig. He held it out to Veritas.
Sufficient?
Veritas took it, eyeing it critically.
It will do.
Then, to my vast relief, Veritas walked past Katie's crumpled form without a single glance, to join the other Law Guardians. None of them looked at me. That was fine. I never wanted to see any of them again.
Ah, we are finished. Your cooperation will be remembered, Menkaris.
As will his betrayal.
Bones stared at Menkaris.
I swore by my blood to co-rule our lines. For my people's sake, I won't rescind that. But my wife and I are leaving. And you won't see us for a very long time.
I understand, Bones.
Menkaris bowed his head.
And once again, I am truly sorry.
Too bloody right you are.
Ian went to Trove and stripped the demon's jacket off his bony remains. Then he wrapped Katie's body in it, head and all. From how small she was, it covered her entirely. Marie, the law guardians, and the council members left without saying anything else. The oppressive power they'd given off dissipated as well, until nothing remained except the energy that radiated from Mancari's, who released me, Bones, and Tate. Bones and I rushed to the hump of clothes in front of Ian, but Tate went straight to Mancari's and punched him so hard, I heard the bones in his hand shatter.
I'll kill you for this.
I was afraid to pull back the cloth in front of me, and afraid not to. Would I find everything I'd hoped for? Or realize that everything I'd feared had come true? Mancari's knelt next to us. When he stared at the lumps beneath the coat, resignation flickered across his darkly handsome features.
Charles will kill me once he hears of this.
Only after he's finished frying my arse.
Charles? What does he have to do with any of this?
Plenty, Ian. I'll explain later.
Bones carefully scooped up the coat-wrapped body, clasping the bundle to his chest.
Grab Tate and try to keep up. Mancari's?
I've got you. All of you.
Mancari's flashed me one of his rare smiles as he rose. I didn't get a chance to respond, or to ask if the bundle was Denise. And if so, where was Katie? Mancari's grabbed the bloody sword and the rest of Trove's skeleton. Then all of us were catapulted into the air. Before we reached the roof, a hole blasted open, allowing us to pass through without impact. We rushed into the night, leaving nothing behind in the ruined building except blood and the smell of sulfur. Mancari's whisked us back to Chicago, but not to the large estate he shared with Kira. Once we reached the outskirts of the metropolitan area, we dropped down at the back of a two-story church. It was well after midnight, so no lights were on inside, though all the noise from the surrounding buildings made it impossible to discern if it was empty. We entered the church through a side door. The scent of candles, incense, and wood polish perfumed the air. Stained glass transformed the light from the street into beams of mauve, blue, amber, and emerald. The colors illuminated the empty pews, the choir area, and the cross that hung front and center above the altar. With how fast Mancari's had propelled us here, I hadn't been able to confirm who was in the coat. Now the question fired out of me like a bullet from a gun. That's Denise, isn't it?
Yes.
Thank God. Relief turned my knees to jelly. Joy kept me upright, and anxiety caused my stomach to lurch, because I could still see two distinct pieces beneath the coat Bones held.
That's Denise?
You're right, Crispin. Charles will kill you, and that's only if she comes back from this. If she doesn't, he'll keep you alive so he can torture you for decades.
Can she come back from this?
Reckon we're about to find out.
I was too worried about Denise to comment about the irony of choosing a church to see if someone branded with demonic essence could resurrect herself. As we approached the altar, I realized that Katie stood below it, flanked by Gorgon, Kira, and a human man who looked vaguely familiar. I didn't spare any of them a second glance, because I couldn't tear my eyes away from my daughter.
She's alive. Whole. Unhurt.
I was seized with the desire to hug her while spinning in deliriously happy circles, and the urge to drop to my knees while sobbing out my thanks to God. Both actions would alarm Katie. She'd already made huge strides by standing there, instead of running or trying to stab anyone. Seeing me break down in hysterics would hardly be reassuring.
Hi, Katie. I see you've met my friends.
The colored hues danced over Katie's face as her head cocked to the side.
I stayed with them, like you ordered.
Like I ordered?
Oh, Katie.
Tate sank to his knees. From his thunderstruck expression, He hadn't believed what we told him about Denise until that moment.
Oh, Katie. Oh, good.
Katie's eyes widened, and she glanced behind her. I nudged Tate. Tate, you're freaking her out. Bones provided ample distraction when he set the bulky coat on the nearest pew and peeled back the blood-sodden fabric. An exact replica of Katie's head rested against the tiny, slender body. Small, pale arms folded over it, almost like the headless doppelganger was hugging it to her chest. As disturbing as the sight was, I was more upset that there wasn't a hint of regeneration in the exposed tissues.
It doesn't look like she's healing.
Nathaniel, why hasn't she grown a new head yet?
Now I remembered. The gangly redhead was Denise's much older relative. He'd once been branded by demonic essence too, which is why he hadn't aged in the century since then.
How long's it been since this happened?
Nearly 2 hours.
Logically, I knew Bones was right, but it felt like only minutes since we'd left Detroit. Emotions acted as their own sort of time machine, slowing it down or cranking it into fast forward, depending on the circumstances.
Why does that look like me?
One day on the job and I'm already a terrible mother, letting my child stare at her own decapitated body.
She's a shapeshifter.
What does that mean?
Shapeshifters can transform into anything they see or imagine. Since people were after you, this one chose your form. That allowed Gorgon to bring you here without them knowing that you'd left.
Why did this shapeshifter help me?
Because she's my friend, and she knew I didn't want you to die. For the briefest moment, Katie's facial mask cracked in a way I'd never seen before. Her mouth slowly curved into a tentative smile.
Your deception was brilliant.
Thank you. Terrible mother moment number two. I couldn't bring myself to tell Katie that I hadn't known about Denise's switcheroo until the last few seconds. Katie had smiled at me. I fought another urge to hug her.
But now that it's dead, you should take it away before it starts to smell.
Not it, Katie. She...
We have a steep uphill battle to deprogram all of Madigan's training, don't we?
Yeah.
Katie was 7, and her body count might be in the dozens, but somewhere inside that prematurely aged militant shell was a little girl. I just had to peel away the layers to find her. And Denise isn't dead, Katie. She's coming back from this. Please, God, let her come back from this. I couldn't stand that my best friend might be gone forever from her selfless act.
She is coming back, kiddo.
Thank God.
Really?
I had the same thing happen to me once, and here I am, all in one piece. She'll be fine. You'll see.
Ian cast a sardonic glance at the cross above us.
Better hope someone's listening, mate. Or once Charles arrives, we're all
fully aware. Fully aware of how awful her loss would be.
My language is the least of your concerns, Reaper.
True, but everyone has to start somewhere, Ian.
Quiet. I sense something.
Not Katie's decapitated head shrank, the skin and tissue evaporating with the same speed Troves had when I stabbed him a second time in the eye. That crown of dirty auburn hair changed too, curling up into nothingness as though being burned by invisible flames. Within seconds, only a bare skull was left. Then the skull imploded into itself, dissipating until all that remained was a small pile of dust. No. Oh, Denise, no! Something rippled over the headless remains, grayish in color, and so fast it reminded me of remnants during a killing frenzy. Then it changed, becoming palest pink instead of ashen, exploding over that small, lifeless form like wave after wave of pounding surf. Instead of shrinking, not Katie's body swelled, increasing until clothes that had sagged from excess material now stretched and tightened. I looked down in disbelief as mahogany-colored satin seemed to spill from the gaping hole in her neck. a pale globe followed, expanding like a balloon under a freely running faucet. Another blur of motion, and features became distinguishable amidst the canvas of new skin, right as the top button popped off the blood-stained shirt from her body filling out to its normal curvy proportions. Dark eyelashes fluttered open, revealing hazel eyes blinking up at me.
Cat, did it work?
I sank to my knees, a happy sob bursting out of me. It was the only response I was capable of. The large craft bobbed up and down in the choppy waves of the Atlantic, held in place by the anchor we'd dropped an hour ago. Reaper used to be emblazoned in red across the hull, but now it said Respite in letters of seafoam green. I like the new name better.
Really?
It signifies the changing direction in my life. The Red Reaper is, for all intents and purposes, no more.
At least for a good long while.
Vampire and Ghoul Society believed that Bones and I had disappeared because I was overwrought with grief and he was royally pissed at his co-ruler. Only a handful of people knew that neither scenario was correct. Most of those people were gathered with us on the rocky Nova Scotia shoreline, about a quarter mile from where our boat was anchored. We hadn't had a chance to say a proper goodbye before, especially with some of them being halfway around the world while events were going down in Detroit and Chicago. It had been a couple weeks since then, and now Spade no longer tried to beat Menkaris and Bones on sight. He did still glare at them, though, and his arm looked to be permanently welded to Denise's side. He didn't even want to let her go when she hugged me.
For the thousandth time, Spade, I'm fine. Though I never want to do that again.
What you did went beyond friendship and beyond bravery.
It wasn't really painful, but do you know I could still see for a few seconds before I passed out? If I'd had a stomach attached, I would have puked for sure.
That you can joke about it now? It shows just how brave you are. I'll always be grateful and amazed by what you did.
How's Katie doing?
We're trying to teach her normal speech instead of military jargon.
It'll take a while to decondition all of Madigan's training.
I'm fine with that.
She laughed for the first time yesterday.
She did?
After my mom swatted Tate and Bones with a freshly caught grouper.
They wouldn't stop squabbling over the best way to prepare it. I keep saying, we're gonna need a bigger boat.
My mother was as happy as I'd ever seen her. If I'd never thought to be a mother, she'd really never thought to be a grandmother. But she seemed to make it her mission to make up for the parenting mistakes she'd made with me by lavishing love on Katie.
But Katie's wonderful. She's my second chance.
Everyone deserves a second chance sometimes. That's why Dawn now hovered over the Respite, watching Katie while we said our goodbyes. Dawn had no one he needed to say goodbye to. As a ghost, he could flit from place to place with ease. Bones hadn't forgiven him, and perhaps never would. But at my insistence, Dawn was allowed to visit Katie for a couple hours every few days. Once we picked a more permanent place to call home, he could hang his ectoplasm nearby if he wanted to. Family is family. And if some members don't get along, well, we wanted to give Katie as normal an upbringing as possible. It doesn't get more normal than that.
I'm gonna miss you. But we'll see each other after you get settled in somewhere.
Not too soon after.
I heard that.
The look Spade bestowed on her was so loving. I didn't care that Spade kinda hated us right now. He was wonderful to my best friend, which was the important thing. Besides, I couldn't blame him for being angry, despite Denise acting of her own free will. When you loved someone, a thought of almost losing them made you irrational. Who was I to judge him for that?
Until again, mate.
Bones held out his hand. Spade looked at it, then used it to pull Bones in for a firm hug.
Until again, Crispin.
I knew he'd forgive Bones eventually. Their history was too long and too multi-layered for him not to. Then Bones turned to the voluptuous strawberry blonde vampire next to Spade and Denise. We were on a rocky beach, with salt spray pelting us as if it were angry, and Annette had still dressed to the nines. She even wore heels. Her makeup looked a little worse for wear, but that was from tears spilling out of her champagne-colored eyes.
Oh, Crispin. I'll miss you terribly.
Once, the sight of Bones hugging his former lover would have filled me with jealousy. Now I only hoped that one day, she'd find someone to love who'd love her back, despite her flaws. And one very memorable incident the day we met, Annette had proved to be fiercely loyal. That's why Bones trusted her with this, his greatest secret.
Oh, you'll make a wonderful father.
He already has. We had a rocky start, but you turned out to be good people.
What's one attempt to kill each other between friends? Right, darling?
My thoughts exactly.
Well, can we move this along? I have places to be, and people to shag.
Ian, I'm not going to hug you, because I know you like this better. With that,
oh!
I slapped him hard enough to rock his head to the side.
Oh, finally. You give me what I want. Knew you loved me, Reaper.
Oh, from the first.
See you soon, cousin.
Oh, indeed you will.
I got bear hugs from Juan, Dave, and Cooper next. Changing over had eradicated most of the damage Madigan had done, but Cooper would always look on the wiry side of Thin, instead of his normal bulky build. I'll miss you guys so much. Stay safe, will you?
Bones is having Menkeris watch our backs while you're gone, so how could we not?
Cat, I've been locked away learning how to control my hunger, so tell me one thing. Is he dead?
Yes, Madigan's dead. I hadn't been there to see it. Neither had Bones. Menkeris had executed our former nemesis, taking his head off with a burst of that incredible power. One moment he was babbling about crayon colors he liked, the next he was no more. He never knew what hit him.
He destroyed so many lives. Did he really deserve such an easy end?
All that was left was a shell. Making that shell pay for Madigan's crimes didn't seem fair. Though even that shell knew too much for Katie to be safe.
A dark form appeared in the dusky sky above us. I only needed to see the long black hair whipping in the wind to know it was Menkeris. Give it to a former pharaoh for knowing how to make an entrance. I expected the woman clasped to his chest to be Kira. When I saw short, thick black hair and a decidedly darker skin tone, I was stunned. Why is she here?
You said you had critical business with me, Menkeris. Have you brought me here for vengeance instead?
No. You're here to be reminded about your word, Majestic.
Good God, why? We were almost done with our goodbyes and on our way to a clean getaway. What was I missing? A shadow appeared in my peripheral vision, and after a glance, I brushed it aside. Just a ghost. I'd been drawing them like stink drew flies, which was why we were spending a few months on a boat before settling either in New Zealand or Australia. Ghosts didn't frequent the open water, and by the time we made up our mind where to go and got Katie to the point where she could interact with people without throwing up big red flags, Marie's power would be out of my system. Until then, I'd have to send this ghost away with instructions not to repeat anything he'd seen or heard. As I'd done with the others, Bones is right. We don't need revenge, because Katie is alive. Marie's mouth actually dropped. Then she looked at me in an odd way, as if wondering if my mind had snapped from grief.
I fail to see how that's possible.
Demon shapeshifter who did us a favor. You can only kill demons one way, and beheading isn't it.
If the person executed wasn't the child, why would you tell me?
You're the only person who can find us without looking. With those filmy minions of yours, no one can hide from you.
So, if any ghosts tell tales of a strange vampire family they encountered, you can order them to shut up. My power to command ghosts will fade, but yours never will.
That's why we're telling you about Katie. You're going to help us keep her a secret.
And you'll want to do that. For if word of her survival spreads, you'll be considered an accomplice in duping the Vampire Council.
How? With this!
Ian held up his phone.
Got some lovely shots of you with Crispin, Kat, and Menkeres. But it's the boat in the background that really makes it incriminating.
Besides, you'll do it because if you don't, I can tear your head off from two cities away.
And I can send remnants after you from the same distance. So let us dispense with the threads.
Yes, let's. Instead, why don't we try something neither of our species has been able to do before? Let's trust each other.
Back in New Orleans, you swore by your blood that if there was a public execution, you'd leave Katie and the rest of us alone.
You got your execution. Now give us our peace.
And we'll promise to do the same with you and your people.
Are you prepared to hide her until she dies a natural death? With her bloodline, that could be a very long time.
Then that's how long we'll be away. I was never a social butterfly anyway.
Menkeres has promised to handle issues with our people as long as necessary.
You would give up so much for another man's child?
Katie is my child. She may not be my biological daughter. That merely means she'll have two fathers.
Marie glanced at the boat. Katie was on deck with Helsing in her arms, as per usual. Much to my delight, Katie loved having a pet. And my kitty took the additional affection as his due. It was almost dark, but I could still see the new blonde highlights in Katie's auburn hair. She loved the sunshine, although we had to slather her with SPF 50. Maybe she spent so much time in it now, because she'd seen it only rarely before.
We will trust each other then. After thousands of years, it's past time our two species tried that instead of threats and death.
Better late than never. I took Bones's hand, savoring the feel of his flesh and the power that curled around me with its own caress. We could accomplish anything together. I hadn't believed that before, but I did now.
Menkeres, since we're all in agreement, you need to return me to my city. I have to make sure no more of my people disobey me like the ones in Detroit did.
A queen's work is never done.
Neither is a mother's, Reaper, as you'll soon discover.
I can't wait to find out. I looked at the boat again, waving this time. Katie looked at me and held up her hand, giving it a tentative wiggle. I couldn't be prouder if she'd composed a sonnet and pinned it to a bullseye by throwing a knife from 50 paces. Which is why I'm starting now. Bones?
I've been ready, love. It's you that takes the longest, as always.
So let's not wait anymore.
Everyone, we'll see you again. Some soon, some later.
But as vampires say, until again. Then, instead of climbing back into the dinghy and rowing, we grabbed it and flew. Night Huntress 7, Up from the Grave, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2014 by Janine Frost. All rights reserved. Recorded by arrangement with the author. Production copyright 2025. Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Laura C. Harris and Yasmin Twazon. Featuring Danny Gavigan as Bones, Stuart Crank as Ian, Dawn Ursula as Marie Laveau, Christopher Graybill as Dawn, Tyler Herchuk as Tate, Elena Anderson as Denise, Alex Hill Knight as Spade, Nusha Nabob as Menkaris, Darcy Lee as Veritas, James Konacek as Vlad, Holly Adams as Justina, Belshazzar Rusape as Tyler, John Vertulo as Madigan, Wynn Delano as Trove, Yasmin Toison as Kat, Becca Rogers as Katie, and Janine Frost as the Dante Protocol. With additional performances by Amanda Forstrom, Bradley Foster Smith, Brian Kim McCormick, Christopher Tester, Danny Montooth, David Quiqui, Donald Guzzi, Drew Copus, Emlyn McFarland, Eric Messner, Gerald Hill, Jameson Hunt, Jerry J. Marshall, Julian Daly, Karen Novak, Kenyatta Rogers, Lise Bruneau, Marnie Penning, Matthew Bassett, Michael John Casey, Nea DeRusso, Nora Ashrati, Patrick Boylan, Raina Kay, Rainer Gabriel, Rita Amparita, Rob Morira, Ryan Haugen, Sarah Ruth Thomas, Torian Brackett, and Troy Allen. Adapted for graphic audio by Yasmin Toison. Directed for graphic audio by Yasmin Toison and Nora Ashrati. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Peter Cassio. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers, Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Next time, join us for Night Huntress 8, A Grave Girl's Getaway. Vampire Kat Crawfield Russell is experiencing a new role, as a mother. Turns out, trying to manage a perfect domestic life for her daughter is more challenging than Kat ever imagined. Since things have finally quieted down in the undead world, her husband Bones suggests that Kat recharge by spending a girls-only getaway with her best friend, Denise. Kat and Denise intend to spend the week doing nothing more than dancing, drinking, and sightseeing. Unfortunately, they stumble across a deadly summer solstice ritual performed by powerful witches, who have no intention of letting their uninvited guests live to reveal what they saw. Will this girls-only getaway turn out to be the last vacation ever for Kat and Denise? If you enjoyed Night Huntress, you might also enjoy these other series. Blood and Ash by Jennifer L. Armentrout, The Four Horsemen by Laura Thalassa, or Mercy Thompson by Patricia Briggs. These and many more titles are available from Graphic Audio at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for a preview of Mercy Thompson 8, Night Broken.
Houtman Residence, can I help you?
Is so Adam I there? Told him.
Arielle cut off her story. Her sensitive ears were caught by the familiar voice on the line. My husband's ex-wife.
I need Adam.
Christy Houtman sounded desperate.
Mom? Mom, what's wrong?
Yes, Adam!
Mom?
Jesse gave me a frantic look.
Adam!
He was in the living room talking to Daryl and a few of the pack who had lingered after breakfast.
Christy is on the phone for you.
It wasn't the first time Christy had called needing something. Dealing with Christy was usually enough to give me a stomachache. Not because of anything she could do to me or Adam, but Jesse, who loved her mother but was currently fighting to keep liking her, suffered every time that woman called. There was nothing I could do to stop it.
He's coming, Mom.
Please, tell him to hurry.
Desperate, hysterical tears. Those weren't unusual, but she sounded scared, too. And that wasn't anything I'd heard before. Adam walked into the room, and from his grim face, I could tell he'd heard at least part of what Christy had said. He took the handset from Jesse, but hugged her with the other arm. Jesse's eyes grew watery under his comforting hold. She gave me a frantic look before bolting away out the door and up the stairs, presumably to her room, where she could collect herself.
What do you need?
Can I come home?
Arielle glanced at me, but I was already wearing my blank face. She wouldn't be able to tell what I was thinking from my expression.
This isn't your home. Not anymore.
Adam! Oh, Adam! I'm in trouble. I need to come home. I've been so stupid. He won't leave me alone. He hurt me. He killed a friend of mine, and he follows me everywhere I go. Can I come home? Please!
That wasn't anything I'd expected. Arielle quit trying to pretend she wasn't listening to every word and jerked her face toward the phone.
Call the police. That's what they're there for.
He'll kill me. Adam, he'll kill me. I don't have anywhere else to run. Please.
Werewolves can tell when people are lying. So can some of the other supernatural critters running around, like me, for instance. Over the phone is a lot trickier because a lot of the telltale signs involve heartbeat and smell, neither of which is possible to detect over a phone line. But I could hear the truth in her voice. Adam looked at me.
Tell her to come.
What else could I say? If something happened to her when we could help? I wasn't sure if I could live with that. I knew that Adam couldn't. Arielle continued to watch me. She frowned, finally turned away, and started to dry the dishes again.
Adam, please.
Adam narrowed his eyes at me and didn't say anything.
Adam.
I turned to find Mary Jo in the doorway. She is a firefighter, tough and smart.
She is owed by the pack for the years that she was yours. Let her come home and the pack will protect her.
He gave Mary Jo a look and she dropped her eyes.
It's okay, Adam.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.